of all elements of the past and all projections in the future. And very hard to do. It's very hard to do. If you've had any meditative experience which has been peaceful and delightful, how many years do you try to, you know, spend trying to repeat that? That's a very common fallacy, mistake, frustration that we go through in meditation. Or maybe we've read something about some experience you're supposed to have or some insight you're supposed to have, and then we try to fit in our experience into some conceptual structure. Is this it? Is this it? Is that it? Is this it? That's anticipation then. So letting go of all elements of the past. So you just, again, come to something very simple. Just listen. Right? You're not, and there's no element in the past there that you need to bring in. You might think, oh, am I listening? Is that what he means? Then you're in trouble, because you have this element of the past, of some suggestion that I'm making, that somehow by listening you're going to get blissed out or something silly like that. But just listening, no element from the past, right? And all projections into the future, like is my effort in attending to this moment, and this is the one where we get caught up into the future, am I trying to achieve something? Right? So I try to achieve some state of meditation which I'd like to achieve, or so non-anticipation, no projection in the future, just listening, just the data. Am I listening because I want to get rid of thought? Right? So maybe my mind is obsessing with some kind of health issue or something difficult like that, and it keeps going there. So then I focus on the breath or the object to get rid of something. Right? So that's a kind of projection of trying to get rid of something to become something else. So the non-desire feels this way. So non-anticipation, non-desire, non-becoming, no element from the past, no projection to the future. And if you can get that principle in just the ordinary, okay, and begin to really trust in that, that's what it is. Trust in that moment where you do notice the suchness of sound, this room, your body, the temperature, and so on. Just the suchness of it. And begin to trust in that and just return to that. That's what I would suggest. Not getting anything else. So not getting rid of thought. Not getting rid of your emotions. Not becoming a better person. A nicer person. If it happens, great. If it doesn't, don't make it a problem. Just don't hurt anyone. Right? Practice right speech. But just see like personality traits which are offensive to you in your own mind. I have things, I don't know about you, I have personality traits which I don't like. But I don't have to live them, but they're part of it, you know. They're just part of the whole, I don't know why, but it's part of the package I've got. So like just personality traits, meditating in order to get rid of a personality trait, to become a better person. That sounds like a good thing, and certainly we do become better people through Sila and Dana, but just a rejection of any state of mind is still fraught with desire and self-view. But to know, like a state, a mood which is domineering or arrogant, and just to know that's just arrogance, and try to practice right speech, try to be a good person. Obviously, you know, that's self-evident. So the pure data, just a pure experience. You sound as the kind of grounding in that, and then apply that to everything. You know, this is just a feeling of being arrogant or dumb. And I mean, if you don't notice it, then you have to live through the karma of it, unfortunately. So if one is, you know, angry, fearful, whatever, and one doesn't notice it, then, and one thinks and believes in that, well, then there's a momentum you have to bear with, and that's purification. So we have that too. You know, the times that we have lost the plot and not been aware, and, you know, said things, done things, thought things, read things, consumed things which were unskillful and inappropriate, well, we have the come of that. So that comes up. So you have the memory of that coming up into mind. people have done things to us which have been unskillful, unpleasant, unkind, unbeautiful, mean, nasty, and stingy. They've done it to us too, right? And that those come up as memories. And just the pure data, this is just memory. And then see, like, that's the contact, how a self is created. And don't go with that. Do not go with that. Try not to go with that. And if you go with that, then don't make that a problem. And if you get lost in self-views, then, oh, this is... Be grateful for being back, say. That's a nice one. You know, you get really lost about something, and then... Even if for the whole hour of meditation, you know, you haven't been even close to planet Tisarana. You've been off with the fairies, you've been all over the place, and the bell finally rings, and you wake up and you're here, just say, oh great, I'm back. Because that works. That's gratitude, it's compassion, it's kindness, the other, oh gosh, my meditation isn't getting anywhere. Oh no, this is a feeling of my meditation not getting anywhere. You see what I mean? Just keep hammering home, coming home, coming home, coming home. Trust in that. The desire mind is the mind of time, isn't it? You know, I feel I want to get something. I have some sense of lack now. And if I keep doing this activity, then in the future that lack will be fulfilled. That kind of works with food, certain things. But the meditative life is the abandonment of desire, rather than the pursuit of desire. It's the relinquishment of desire. It's the cessation of desire. And so desire needs to be understood. And you have to bear with it, unfulfilled desire. So again, like use simple things again, like the discomfort in the body again. Discomfort in the body will produce desire to move, and that's biological. There's nothing wrong with that. But there is a transition time there where you don't really have to move. You'll be fine, you know that. It's just discomfort, it's not yet like gross pain. And then just watch, okay, what is desire here? This is pain. Where is desire? And desire is always the movement towards the future, not to have this pain. But what does it actually feel like? And then your mind is silent and receptive to that inquiry. So we begin to inquire into consciousness, but not just through intellectual analysis, not just conceptually, but actually viscerally, immediately. Are we just looking at the data? What is it really like? What is desire? And the mind has this kind of silent attentiveness. And from that, you begin to understand how attachment desire is suffering, how attachment desire creates a sense of self, how the world arises from that, and so on. So the object of meditation, the object that you use, as opposed to the goal of meditation, the object that you use, is really just for that, okay? It's for helping you to know that the present moment is this way. So for some people, breath really works, but a lot of people it doesn't work. Breath meditation doesn't work. It, somehow they feel very contracted. Somehow they feel they get into a kind of control mode. So the suggestions, and mindfulness of breathing is one of the kind of very general practice that you find in Buddhism, so I tend to talk about it. But what maybe we'll do this time is that because all of you have got a lot of experience, in terms of your experience, what works for you, go for it. If what I'm saying doesn't work for you, just bear with me and then do what works. Because it's not so much the technique, it's the underlying attitude. And it's the way you put forth effort, the way you apply attention, and how you sustain that attention. But the objects of attention really vary according to our personality and character. So you have, you know, generally I think you can see in meditative techniques, you have the kinds of techniques which are very, very obviously connected to an object. So breath meditation, sweeping meditation, Mr. Goenka's, you know, bodily feeling meditation, metta bhavana, practices of loving kindness. They pick up a theme or an object and they run with that. So the breath, the idea of the breath, it composes and collects the mind. Metta bhavana opens the heart. Body meditation gets you in touch with the energy system of your body. And those are good to know. And then you find a class of meditations which are much more spacious. So you have like Lompo Sumedho, when he talks about the sound of silence, choiceless awareness, space, these kinds of things, where the mind doesn't grasp an object. It doesn't focus on an object. It opens to the movement of objects. And those are the sort of, there's variance in all those themes, but those are the ways the people, when I talk with them, the differentiation I find that people when they define meditation. So I mean, it's good to know how to compose the mind. It's good how to like really collect your mind on the breath, to be able to do that. But it's also good to be able to put down the object of meditation and just allow an open mind to participate in the flow of things. And then the experimenting between those two helps you to see what works for you, how effective it is. Sometimes the whole meditative process is really one of patiently enduring, like purification, maybe some constant like sleepiness sometimes. You know, learning about dullness is a very serious kind of practice that we need to understand the energy body. So you might spend a whole retreat just trying to get that one sorted, or a whole year, who knows. So you think, oh gosh, if I didn't have sleepiness, then I could meditate. Yeah, but then sleepiness is your meditation. So you also take into account what is the energy form, what is the mood, what's going on in your mind. So if you're feeling really sleepy, and you're trying to do kind of refined breath meditation, it's pointless. Really, it'll put you to sleep. You have to do something much more vigorous. So as I was saying this morning, if you're feeling sleepy, you just have to do more like a yoga pranayama kind of thing. You have to, I might do ujjayi pranayama or just deep breathing for a long time, for a really long time, and learn to hold your spine up for a long, long time. If dullness is a kind of chronic hindrance that comes to you, and the dull mind it just doesn't have that kind of vitality and sustained energy to just stay with the body. So if you're not aware that you're sleepy, well then you're in trouble. So ask your friends, am I sleepy? And if they say you're sleepy and you said no, I'm not, you are. That's for sure. Then, if that's the case, then make an intention before you meditate to actually notice that whole hindrance, because it's going to come. And then learn about your body, because dullness is something you're not in your body, you're in your head, just off into head spaces. So then learn about the breath, really learn about it. What happens when I breathe deeply for a long time? I mean, do it a long, long time, like a whole hour if you have to. What happens to the spine? Like energize the spine, learn how to do that. Learn, like, if you've done any yoga classes, teacher asks you, hold it, hold it a long time. You hate the teacher. But actually, you get a lot of, if the teacher's good, you get all the vitality going. So in the same way, like if you're dull, learn to hold the spine, really stretch it, and like get some muscles going in the body to keep it all up there, right? And then like do forceful things. And it sounds very willful, but that's an extreme you have to do if the mind is extremely dull. Vice versa, if you're just like looking at the clock all the time. So the sleepy person figures out that, thinks that, well, that was a quick sitting. The restless person thinks this sitting's never going to end. So that, it's a different mindset. So the restless person always kind of looking at the clock and adjusting the posture and how much more, and there's more pain in the body, where the dull person doesn't notice the pain. They're just conked out. Just unconscious. So the restless person has a whole different kind of program to do, and for the restless person, it really is just relaxing much more, And you don't have to put much effort forth. You don't have to, you know, be strict with yourself. You have to relax. Relax the body. Nowhere to go. Nothing to do. And don't look at the clock. Because this is like if you're restless and you're, how much more time is there? Look at that mindset. Rather than you're not, you have no clocks anyway, so you're all right. But like if you're kind of a clock watcher, that's restlessness. They watch the desire to watch, look at a clock. So those are the hindrances of energy, and they need to be understood. And they'll be different at different times. But our meditation has vitality. It has life in it. Right? It's not just a kind of survival for an hour of just sort of being, kind of being there. It has vitality, and that vitality comes through the body. So let's do some meditation practice, and I'll make those suggestions about present moment. I'll pop in like non-anticipation, non-becoming, and see if you can tune into those words and find those words, use those words yourself in some way.